Off the ball. Rugby.
And then with the players, they're just so supportive and, you know, you see it, like they play with their heart in their sleeve and that's all you want from them, to do or die out there, and that's what they do.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball's Breakfast Bite, giving you a flavour of Ireland's sports breakfast show.
Keith, it's also a big night in League of Ireland action this evening. I'm just looking at the fixtures. So you've Bowes against Cork, 7:45, Dalymount Park. Drogheda United against Shelburne. Galway United versus Derry City. Waterford against Sligo Rovers. And, well, I guess the big one, Pats against Rovers, Richmond Park. And that game's going to be live commentary and Off the Ball on News Talk of that one as well.
Yeah, Pats and Rovers is a big, big game. Both on 17 points. Shamrock Rovers, 5 wins and 1 draw in the last 6 games. And, you know, I haven't heard an awful lot of people telling me that they think Shamrock Rovers are going to win the league this season, which is crazy when they've got Jack Bourne back. Aaron Green has scored 2 goals. Graham Bourke has 2 goals and 2 assists already. Second against third. I think whoever wins this will put themselves in a really good position. And look, the league is 25% done now at this stage, and we've absolutely no idea who's going to win the league. If that, and it's become more diluted because Drogheda have thrown themselves into the mixer, and it's like Drogheda play Shelbourne tonight. It's probably the best team in the league right now against the best team last season, obviously the champion. So just big games. Every game seems like a big game. Waterford against Sligo. I mean, Sligo desperate for a win. Both teams in awful, awful form at the minute. So Sligo Waterford's massive. Pats Rovers, absolutely massive. Galway, Derry. Galway have been excellent, and Derry have been a little bit patchy. Bowes against Cork, there's big games everywhere. I do worry about Cork a little bit. I'm worried about Bowes in general, but looking at Cork, Keaton out for the season, Maguire out, Bulger out.
Huge
that's
blows.
The spine of the team right there. And the reason I looked at Cork and Tim Clancy, and I thought Cork would be fine this season, a large majority of that was because of Rory Keaton and Seanie Maguire. With the two of them out for the foreseeable future, I think it's going to be a difficult season for Cork. And I think the remit for Cork was to stay in the league this season, obviously just promoted. They'd rip your hands off of that now.
Off the pitch of Shamrock Rovers, there was the news on Wednesday as well. Just bizarre story that came out. The Shamrock Rovers board, I guess we're probably reacting strangely to this one as well, because co-owner Dermot Desmond warning the club membership to, quote, carefully consider the actions of some non-executive directors following the imminent departure of Chief Executive John Martin. So Dermot Desmond is a 25% stakeholder in Rovers, wrote to the membership on Wednesday in this open letter to highlight persistent moves to remove Stephen Bradley as first team manager. That's despite all the success they've had in recent years. This was a strange one, Keith, wasn't it? Like, you don't expect to see this sort of thing happen off pitch at probably the most successful club this country's seen in the last decade.
Yeah, it's really strange. Just Stephen Bradley over the last couple of years at Shamrock Rovers has done an incredible job, not just domestically, but in Europe as well. He's making inroads. So the people on the board are the non-shareholders that want Stephen Bradley out. I don't understand their reasoning. I'm sure they'll have some sort of bullet point, meeting that they'll want to get their point across, but on the pitch, Shamrock Rovers have been largely brilliant. I know last season they didn't win the league, but given what they did in Europe, I think we can forgive that. And these things should always be kept behind closed doors. I know it's probably common knowledge that some people in the background are making noise, but I think Dermot Desmond should have just had a word with Stephen Bradley in his ear saying, look, there is a bit of noise, but you're good with me and everything's fine and the club is all right. To play this out in public, I don't think it is something anything want. But if Shamrock Rovers going to beat St. Pat's in Inchicore tonight, what a brilliant reaction that'll be, and it'll just dampen down all that noise. So I think it's only really news if Shamrock Rovers going to lose tonight, then maybe it'll be thrown on top.
Hannah O'Connor, delighted to say, is with us in studio. Morning, Hannah.
Morning, lads. How are we?
Thanks for coming in. Keeping well. Looking forward to this one. I suppose before we look forward, we look back, and that defeat against England, 49-5, which on the face of it seems like a drubbing, but that was far from the tail of the tape, because for large portions of that first half, 35-40 minutes, Ireland were well in that game.
Yeah, and I think that was the most pleasing thing, that they were so well in that game within those first 40 minutes. That in previous years, I know a couple of years ago we went over to, probably 3 years ago now, went over to Leicester, and it was 10-0 at half time, but we were hanging on and surviving in that, whereas in that first 40 minutes, Ireland really fired shots, scored first and deservedly so. And you heard Scott Beaman talk about there that, you know, that first half could have gone a different way completely, in the sense that Ireland could have taken more opportunities and scored more. And then, you know, it looks a lot different going into half time. So they'd have really analysed that first half. But yeah, it's not reflective of kind of the game itself. But definitely the girls would be looking at that, kind of building on that kind of 45 minute performance that they had, and putting it all together then this Sunday against Wales, which would be huge for them.
When you think about the ambitions at the start of the Six Nations, I guess, Hannah, it was to close the gap. Yeah. To the top two, it was to get three wins. Mm. Still on course for that. Has that gap closed in your view, and in what we've seen so far?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think off the back of the WXV1 performance that they've put in, or the performances that they put in over there, it was about bridging that gap further away from the likes of the Italy, Scotland and Wales, and making it very, very obvious, which I think they did against Italy with that performance that they put in, and playing right up until the 82nd minute. France, we saw that they closed the gap even further. They'll be really frustrated probably with how that one ended in terms of what could have been against them. England, we saw those shoots again of what can be against the top tier team, arguably the best team in the world there. But again, none of that matters unless they can back it up again this weekend against Wales and show that the gap is definitely there. And the likes of the Italy performance, or even like that first half against England, wasn't just a flash in the pan, that they must be able to build on it and kind of go again this weekend.
What were the main positives that you saw last weekend?
I think Ireland's ability to kind of maintain that composure in the pressure. I think that's what we've lacked against the likes of the England over the last few years, that they will just suffocate us and they will make you deviate away from your own game plan and your own style of pattern and play. And yet you can hardly fire any shots against them over the last few years. We've been like our score, like that's the first try, Amy Lee Costigan's score being the first try that we've actually scored ourselves over the last 6 years, which is kind of a scary stat.
It's mad.
In itself, one that I didn't know about till the time, which makes it a bit more depressing. But that other scores have come from penalty tries or kicks that, you know, being able to kind of live in those moments and take your chances, I suppose, will stand to them massively. Against a Wales now, a buoyed Wales team who are coming under, you know, new management with Sean Lynn taking over, they're almost an unknown quantity because you don't know what they're going to bring. They've got a few players coming back from injury as well. So the thing that Ireland will be taking away is, you know, the composure that they had against the likes of the England under that pressure. But they must be able to do it now this weekend again against a slightly lesser opposition in Wales.
Go ahead, Keith.
We played Wales this time last year, if my mind is correct, and we beat them 36-5.
Yeah, down in Cork.
Have we improved? Have Wales improved? What are you expecting?
Yeah, definitely. It's a different journey, I suppose, that both teams are on. You look at Wales and they're probably where we were a couple of years ago in terms of kind of down in the doldrums, kind of making their way back up from it. I think having someone like Sean Lynn come in from Gloucester has been a huge asset to them. He knows those players really well, and being involved in the Prem, he knows what it takes to coach in women's rugby and the strengths that Welsh team has. He'll be building a massive part on their culture and what goes behind them, which is probably something they've been lacking over the last while. Like, there was a very damp squib for them last year, as you said, when they came to Cork. They really didn't fire any shots, but Ireland, likewise, that day were excellent. So they'll be hurting from that one. They'll remember that one for sure. And when you bring them over into their home patch as well, it adds an kind of level to it. But we are, I think, you know, in a different place to them in terms of where we are on that upward trajectory, being able to play in the WXV1s, which they didn't do. You know, they're at the lower level of it. They are building in a different phase, so they'll very much be looking at taking these games as kind of building towards the World Cup, but also they won't be finishing with that wooden spoon either. So it adds another dynamic to it, probably where we were a couple of years ago, and nobody wants to end up with that wooden spoon. So that will add certainly fuel to the fire for them.
And time to turn our attention to Gaelic football, because it is a big weekend, plenty of fixtures to look forward to, including in the Ulster Senior Football Championship quarter-final at St Shernock's Park in Clonus, Monaghan against Donegal. Delighted to have on the line former Donegal star Eamon McGee. Good morning, Eamon.
Morning, Shane. How are you?
And also the former Monaghan star Kieran Hughes. Morning, Kieran. How are things?
Shane, how are you doing? How's things?
Keeping well. I had a video pop up. Ulster GAA posted it the last couple of days. I get both of your take on this one. The 2013 Ulster final. I know there was back and forth. Donegal won it in 2014. Monaghan won it again in 2015. Am I right in saying, Kieran, yourself and Eamon were at it toe-to-toe in 2013? You had a good afternoon that day, but you two will be quite familiar with each other on the pitch, I'd imagine.
2013, Kieran, I'm just going to drop off here now, can you?
Connection's gone to Eamon there all of a sudden, yeah.
You've been in first day, yeah.
What do you remember of that day, Kieran?
Yeah, 13, yeah, sure. I was been told during the week previous that Eamon was going to be on me, and he was going to be mouthing and all the sorts of the day, and he ended up not opening his mouth that day. But that was the last of it, unfortunately. Now there was a 3 or 4 year period there now where the two of us had some ding dong battles now.
Yeah, Eamon, you can open your mouth now.
I think 2013, first of all, I wore a pair of white boots. You know, it was a matter of going out. We took Monaghan for granted completely and wore a pair of white boots because it was a matter of going in, winning an Ulster final, ticking the box and getting down there. And I think the fact that I wasn't mouthing to Kieran, I didn't, was another kind of symptom of that. You know, we took them so much for granted now, and I never made that mistake again now. But it was a good lesson for that Donegal. It was a good lesson overall, like for me as a footballer, that, you know, if you're not on it and you treat an opponent like that there with disrespect, you're going to get caught out. And it was a long day at the office now.
So the white boots were the no-no, Eamon.
The white boots, they gave them to Aladdin Gidor, and I says, I never want to see them boots again. Now just get rid of them.
what were those games like, Eamon? Because it was a period where Monaghan and Donegal just seemed to meet an awful lot in the championship, both kind of tipping away. Malachy O'Rourke obviously took over a Monaghan team. Jim McGuinness had won the All-Ireland in 2012, and I think it was three Ulster finals in a row that followed between the two counties. So there was a lot of ding-dong battles. I don't know if I'd say Monaghan were a bogey team for Donegal at that stage, but they were always fairly close games.
Monaghan weren't a bogey. They were just a very good team. They were hard to beat. You know, Malachy had worked a good system there, and he had good players around him, and that's the reason. It wasn't the fact that they have a hoodoo over Donegal. I mean, they're just a good team, and they were hard to beat. And then games, I love them games. You know, like, listen, there were Tyrone was probably on the decline at the time, and Monaghan and Donegal were the two top teams in Ulster, and you know they took on a wee edge, and it's something like I had a wide respect for that group of Monaghan players, and I loved it. Was just good moments going down the home straight, and who was the better? Or like 2013, we're comprehensively beaten. 2014, a bit tighter. We came out on top. 2015, I think it was a point. Kieran, was it? You won by.
Yeah, just about. Hey, yeah, Paddy had a shot at the end. He tailed, sort of went over the bar and or went over the post, sorry.
To listen to this morning's full Off the Ball breakfast, become a member at offtheball.com/join now.
Take a detour from the ordinary.
Owen, it's finally here. Your 10-part documentary, Diverted.
Took a long time.
It's time to get diverted.
This has taken too long, but finally glad that it's here.
Join Owen Sheehan as he brings you the conversations you didn't know you needed to hear.
It's like the content version of your eyes being bigger than your belly, or whenever it comes to food.
From the unexpected to the unforgettable, Diverted explores it all.
For some reason, I've decided to hitchhike through Argentina.
Irlanda.
Holanda.
Irlanda.
Irlanda.
Irlanda. See.
Available for free on all Off the Ball channels. Divert it on Off the Ball.